So usually when we talk about getting a medical diagnosis, there's this expectation of physical precision.
Right, it's a very binary thing.
Exactly. Like you break your arm, the x-ray shows that jagged white line, and the doctor in the white coat just points to the light box and says, you know, there it is.
Yeah, it's very tangible.
But today, the actual room you sit in to get that diagnosis is, well, it's completely invisible. And the architecture powering that invisible room, the global telemedicine market, is projected to hit, get this, $380.33 billion by 2030.
It's just a staggering amount of capital flowing into a sector that, honestly, just a decade ago was considered a niche convenience.
Oh, totally.
I mean, we are witnessing a fundamental rewiring of healthcare delivery. The whole epicenter of care is shifting from the physical hospital building to the server rack.
Yeah, and to understand how we actually arrive at nearly half a trillion dollars, we are doing a deep dive today into a really comprehensive document. It's called The Definitive Guide to Telemedicine App Development Solutions.
It's a fantastic source.
It really is. And the mission for you listening today isn't just to talk about, you know, opening an app and doing a video call with a doctor. We're reverse engineering this. We're stripping this down to the studs to understand exactly what it takes financially, technically, strategically, to build a digital hospital ecosystem from the ground up.
Because the stakes here are, well, they're entirely decoupled from normal software development.
Right. Okay, let's unpack this. I kind of think of a telemedicine app like an iceberg.
Okay, the ice.
Yeah, like the video call on your iPhone is just the tip you see above water. It's sleek, it's modern. But the massive, complex infrastructure hidden beneath the surface is what keeps the whole thing afloat. If a food delivery app crashes, your pizza is late.
Right, annoying, but fine.
Exactly. But if a telemedicine platform suffers a database failure, a critical diagnosis is missed, or your deeply private biological data is exposed to the internet.
Which is an absolute nightmare. The regulatory and technical environments are just completely unforgiving.
So, to understand why this is a $380 billion industry, we have to look at the blueprint of virtual care. What are these apps actually doing beyond that simple video chat?
Well, the source breaks it down into four core components. You have the video calls, obviously, which, by the way, are proven to be as effective or sometimes even more effective than in-person care for things like mental health.
Wait, really? More effective?
Yeah, for mental health management, absolutely. But video alone is pretty useless without the infrastructure supporting it. So the second pillar is secure messaging, which implies heavy encryption and strict IPACE compliance.
Okay, that makes sense.
Then there's appointment scheduling, which is interesting because studies show it significantly lowers no-show rates compared to physical offices.
I mean, I guess it's a lot easier to just click a link than to drive across town and find parking.
Precisely. And the fourth, and arguably most important pillar, is electronic health record, or EHR, integration.
So the doctor actually has your medical history in front of them, not just a random person on a screen.
Exactly. But how these four pillars are deployed changes depending on the specific model of care. The source outlines four main models. First is on-demand, which is for urgent, non-emergency issues, like a sudden fever or, a sinus infection.
Basically, the modern walk-in clinic.
Right. Then you have teletherapy. But the third model is where we see a spectacular shift in actual outcomes, and that's remote patient monitoring, or RPM.
Okay. This is where we bring in the hardware, right? Like wearable tech, smart sensors tracking your heart rate in real time.
Exactly. And the clinical results of RPM are profoundly disruptive. The source highlights studies showing a 50% reduction in hospitalizations for patients using remote monitoring devices.
Wait, a 50% drop in hospitalizations? That's a complete paradigm shift.
It really is. We're moving from reactive medicine to proactive continuous telemetry. And then there's a fourth model, store and forward telemedicine, which pushes this efficiency into asynchronous care.
Okay, I love store and forward. It reminds me of asynchronous remote work. It's like, you know, leaving a Google Doc comment for a colleague in another time zone, knowing they'll get to it later. But instead of a spreadsheet, it's a doctor securely forwarding photos of a weird skin rash to a dermatologist.
Right, or sending an x-ray to a radiologist to review at 2 a.m. It completely detaches the delivery of care from simultaneous availability.
But hold on, does this mean we are moving toward a world where live doctor visits are only for emergencies and literally everything else is asynchronous or just handled by wearable data?
It's a logical question, but the source suggests a more nuanced reality. While asynchronous care strips out the administrative inefficiency, the human element of a live consultation is still a clinical necessity.
Right. because doctors still need to read body language or pick up on the tone of your voice.
Exactly. The goal isn't to replace live visits, but to relentless filter out the routine data collection. So when a doctor is live with you on video, that time is spent on complex analysis and building trust.
Which introduces the central friction of building these platforms. It's not just an app for one person. This software has to serve a three-headed monster of user experience, right?
A very demanding three-headed monster.
Yeah.
Patients, healthcare providers, and administrators.
And if any one of those three heads is unhappy, the whole platform kind of collapses. So let's look at the patient experience first. They want accessibility.
Right. They want frictionless accessibility. And the source points out the critical role of AI pre-screening assistance here. When a patient opens the app, they don't just see a calendar, they interact with a triage system.
So if I type, I have a sore throat and a mild headache, the AI recognizes that as low priority and just routes me to standard scheduling.
Exactly. But you type chest pain and shortness of breath, the system completely changes its behavior. It flags it as urgent, instantly bypasses the normal queue, and facilitates an emergency connection.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me, but also a bit scary. How much liability does the app take on if the AI pre-screening gets it wrong? I mean, it acts as a gatekeeper. If someone downplays their symptoms, could the system fail them?
That liability is exactly why these systems are engineered as strict health assistants, not diagnostic doctors. They operate on highly sensitive tripwires.
So they're super cautious.
Incredibly cautious. If there is even a fractional statistical probability of a severe issue, the algorithm defaults to the highest level of urgency. They are programmed with hard-coded safety nets to err on the side of false positives, because the actual medical diagnosis legally has to come from a human provider.
Okay, so the AI is basically the ultra-cautious bouncer. That brings us to the second head of the monster, the healthcare providers. What do they need?
They need instant access to the EHR. When that video call connects, they need the system to have already cross-referenced symptoms, visually highlighted drug allergies, and they need e-prescribing tools with interaction alerts. And above all, zero latency communication.
Zero latency is huge. We've all been on a Zoom call where the video freezes and the audio is garbage and it's annoying. But if a neurologist is trying to assess a stroke patient's facial symmetry over video,
a 50 millisecond lag is a diagnostic hazard.
Exactly. And that biological necessity for precision brings us to the admins, the business operators keeping the lights on.
Right. They need analytics. They need automated billing and insurance verification. For instance, tracking busy weekend hours to dynamically adjust provider staffing algorithms.
So developers have to build a front end as intuitive as ordering an Uber, a back end as secure as a hospital records room, and an analytics dashboard for the admins. How do they actually construct a system capable of handling all this without crashing?
Well, the source breaks down the strategy by looking at a minimum viable product, or MVP, versus an advanced platform. But in healthcare, an MVP is kind of a paradox.
Because you can't just build a scrappy, unsecure test app when you're dealing with patient health data.
Precisely. Even the MVP, which is just basic login, video, and manual booking, still legally requires military-grade encryption and IP-compliant servers.
Right.
But once you move to an advanced platform, you're layering in immense complexity. We're talking multi-factor authentication, AI-powered transcription of the call so the doctor doesn't have to type, and integrating external IoT devices for that RPM data.
And all this complexity has to be invisible to the user. The source mentions a crucial benchmark mapping user flow so a patient can book in fewer than 5 clicks.
Fewer than 5 clicks to authenticate, input symptoms, pick a doctor, and verify insurance. It's a masterclass in UI design. And it has to prioritize ADA compliance, too.
Oh, right, like high contrast fonts and text-to-speech for visually impaired users. So what does the actual tech stack look like for this?
They lean into specific cross-platform front-end tools. Things like React Native or Flutter, which let developers write one code base for both iOS and Android.
But the backend has to do the heavy lifting for real-time data, right?
Exactly. They'll often use Node.js or Python for the backend to handle concurrent streams without choking. For data, PostgreSQL is huge for structured EHR data because it's rigid and unalterable. And they'll pair that with Firebase for real-time ephemeral updates.
And they aren't building the video tech from scratch. They use APIs, right? Like Twilio for video and Stripe for payments.
Correct.
So what does this all mean for the developers? It sounds like they aren't reinventing the wheel for video or payments, but rather acting as master contractors, stitching together all these ultra-secure APIs.
That's a perfect analogy. And being that master contractor requires a lot of capital. When you combine elite engineering with grueling regulatory compliance, The price tag is sobering.
Let's look at the invoice. A basic MVP takes, what, 2 to 3 months? And costs somewhere between $30,000 and $55,000.
Just to get to the starting line, yeah.
Yeah.
A fully functional advanced platform takes 6 to 12 plus months and runs $80,000 to well over $200,000.
And it varies by type, right? Consultation only is like $30,000 to $70,000. But if you want that RPM functionality, it jumps to $70,000 to $150,000.
And a full multi-role platform sits firmly in the $120,000 to $250,000 plus range, which forces a strategic decision. Do you build in-house or outsource?
Right, control versus global expertise and flexible pricing.
Exactly. But regardless of who builds it, there are massive roadblocks. We talked about latency ruining patient trust, but another huge one is EHR interoperability. Getting modern code to talk to messy, archaic data formats in legacy hospital systems is a nightmare.
And then there's provider adoption, which I have to push back on this a little bit. I'd assume doctors would love this because it makes them more efficient. Why is adoption a roadblock if the tech is supposed to be this good?
Because doctors are incredibly time poor. Their workflows are deeply ingrained. If a beautifully designed app requires them to change their habits or do double data entry where they type notes in the app and then retype them into the main hospital system, they will reject it entirely.
Okay, that makes sense. It doesn't matter how good the AI is if the doctor refuses to log in.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the ultimate vault, security and compliance in 2026. This is the biggest hurdle, isn't it?
It is. Regulatory compliance, IPAE, in the U.S., GDPR in the EU, is an absolute necessity from day one. You can't bolt it on at the end as an afterthought.
And the specific security measures are intense. The source talks about AES 256 encryption for data at rest and TLS 1.3 for data in transit.
Plus, continuous penetration testing, where they basically hire hackers to simulate cyber attacks to find vulnerabilities.
We hear AES 256 and our eyes glaze over, but essentially, if this app is connected to my wearable device and knows my real-time heart rate and exact location, it's holding more sensitive data than my bank. A data breach here isn't just stolen money, it's stolen biology.
It is permanently exposed physiological vulnerability, which is why you have to allocate 15 to 20% of the initial budget just for post-launch maintenance, server costs, and security patches.
Wow, 20% just to maintain it.
Yeah. A great real-world application of this precision engineering is Scopic's partnership with JobSite Care. They created a web presence for physician-led workplace injury care. And it really showcases the need to align complex software with highly specific medical regulations.
So pulling all this together, a telemedicine app is a massively complex $200,000 plus digital ecosystem. It demands seamless APIs, multi-layered security, and flawless user experience for three completely different sets of people.
It really is an absolute triumph of modern software architecture.
It is. And the next time you book a virtual checkup in under 5 clicks, you'll know exactly how much work went into that convenience.
Absolutely.
But before we wrap up today, I want to leave you with one final thought that wasn't actually in our source text, but I think it builds on what we've been talking about.
Okay, let's hear it.
With remote patient monitoring getting so advanced, continuously tracking your vitals, using AI to predict health events before you even feel sick, will the concept of the annual doctor's checkup soon become totally obsolete?
Oh, that's an interesting thought.
Right. Like, will we stop proactively scheduling appointments and instead just wait for our telemedicine app to tap us on the wrist and say, hey, your heart is doing something weird. I've already booked you a video call for 2 p.m. Something to think about. Thanks for diving deep with us today.